I remember in high school, our Rosh Yeshiva told us the following story. We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home. He told us that he was once by the tailor to pick up pants that he had shortened or lengthened, whatever, fixed. And the tailor told him to try it on. So for some reason, this tailor didn't have a changing room. So he's switching his pants. He's in his boxers, and person from his kehillah comes in, and the tailor does not have his order ready. So the guy from the kehillah starts yelling at the tailor, berating him. I gave it to you, and you promised me, and come on. And the tailor tells him, I'm sorry, I was sick, I wasn't here, I couldn't do it. And back and forth. And suddenly this constituent, this member of his kehillah, turns around and sees his rabbi standing there in his boxers, and he says, I'm sorry, rabbi, I didn't see you were here. So he says, yeah, that's probably because you don't recognize me with my pants down. But the guy said a line that was very interesting. I'm sorry, rabbi, I didn't realize that you were here. And what difference does it make if the rabbi's there? Is his behavior correct or not? The first halacha in Shulchan Aruch tells us that we have to take care that our behavior reflects the behavior we would have in the presence of God. And that's not an easy thing to do. The Ramon, the beginning of Shulchan Aruch, tells us, Shiviti Hashem l'negdi tamid. He quotes the passage from Moreh Nevuchim, where the Rambam quotes the Pasuk in Tehillim, where King David says, I place God before me always. And then the Rama goes on to quote the Rambam from Moreh Nevuchim, that a person's behavior is different when he's in the presence of honorable people. And so how much more so when we recognize that we are in the presence of God? Now that's not an easy way to live life. So our Mishnah, Akavya ben Maalalel, comes and tells us, Akavya ben Maalalel Omer, and we have to remember that Akavya ben Maalalel, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, that there was no one in Israel who was fearful of sin like Akavya ben Maalalel. He was a tremendous person. I guess he practiced what he preached. He said, "Histakel b'shtosha dvarim." Histakel always means to look with intent, right? Our sages said, you want to do business, you could do business. If a woman's giving you change, you could take the change. But if a person is mistakel, if a person looks with intent, afidu betzba ktana shel isha, even at a woman's pinky, that's forbidden. The question is, how do you look? Meaning, am I seeing or am I looking? If you look with intent, of enjoying someone's beauty, that's prohibited. To see someone, yeah, you could do business with women. You could take change from the woman behind the cash register. The question is, are you looking? So our sages said, one who's looking, that's prohibited. To see what change you get, to see who's giving you the change, that's no prohibition. But here we use the term histakel. Akavya ben Maalalel tells us, look. Meaning, look with intent, b'shlosha dvarim, at three things, ben ata ba lidei avera, and you won't come to the handle of sin. Meaning, sin always has its handle, the thing that brings you to it. Lo tavo lidei avera, you won't come to the handle that brings one to sin. Da, you have to know. To know. It's not just the theory, but to know. Me'ayin bata ulanata olech, where do you come from? Where are you going? And before who are you going to give an accounting? Nine bata. Where does the person come from? Mitipasucha. From a simple, spoiled drop. So a person can sometimes think, why does the person get carried away with himself? Because he's getting carried away with himself. And if a person would think, hey, wait a second, where am I coming from? What am I so proud of? Where are my humble beginnings? Chazal tell us, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ma'amid Parnasa LaTzibur, God does not appoint a person to a position of leadership, Ela Im Ken Yesh Acharav Kupa Shel Shratzim. Unless he's carrying behind him, so to speak, over his shoulder, he has a bag of vermin. Meaning, no one gets appointed to leadership unless they have skeletons in their closet. If you don't have skeletons in your closet, you can't be a leader of the people of Israel. If there isn't something back there that you're a little bit embarrassed about, that you're not so comfortable about, then you're not a leader. Chazal say, before Hashem chooses a leader, that's a good question. Maybe his kupa shel shratzim was Korach. Maybe that was his kupa shel shratzim. I don't know. Chazal say, King David had a genealogy where it was uncertain where he's coming from. Where is he coming from? Lot. Lot's incest with his daughters, where is he coming from? The Moabites, it's unclear whether Ruth is acceptable into the marriage with Boaz or not. Where is he coming from with Yishai and his mother, where it's unclear how his mother became pregnant? So David HaMelech, Chazal say it about David. He didn't do anything wrong. But there was something in his history which could lead him, he could be shamed about, and that keeps a person down. So sometimes we're reminded, wait a second, every one of us, where are we all coming from? Before a person gets proud, a person has to stop and think, wait a second, what am I? Chazal say, why does God send us to the bathroom? Why couldn't God make it that when we go to the bathroom, it would work, would look differently? It would be more aesthetic. Sages say, God gave us reminders of what we are. God said, look, you're like an animal. Look at how you have to go to the bathroom. And be reminded what you are. And the Medrash concludes and says, and still we're proud. Imagine how much more proud we would be if when a person would go to the bathroom, then perfume would come out. That's how the Medrash concludes. If a person had the greatest perfumes coming out of him when he relieved himself, so then he would be even more proud. So God reminds us sometimes, you're not so pretty. A person likes to think everything is nice, beautiful. Sages cautioned us that the pride brings a person down. So if one wants to stay away from the handle of sin, the first thing is to remember where he's coming from. Ulan ata olech. The next point is to remember, where am I headed? Limkom afari mavet olea. Ultimately, it's all vermin. We're going to be consumed. And we like to forget that. We like to live in the moment. We learned about that in our Sefer Amidot classes the last week, about how the pride gets in our way, because we like to think this is the way it's going to stay. People don't like to think about the fact that things are not in their control. The economy is not in their control. Their health is not in their control. Their relationships are not always in their control. There are a lot of things that are not in our control. But we like to forget that. The Rishonim ask, why don't we make a blessing on the mitzvah of charity? When you give charity, why don't you make a blessing? Because that's a mitzvah which is too much out of our control to make a blessing. Charity is something which the poor person could say no. And then you didn't keep your mitzvah. So you can't make a blessing on something that's contingent on someone else's desire too. So we have things that we take for granted. Of course, if I give him a dollar, he'll take it. Who said? And so
when I was in high school, I used to go around my school trying to offer people quarters, and they would never, not one person ever took it. I think they figured you might have done something weird to it if you give them an unsolicited quarter, but
you got a quarter for them?
No, it's U.S. currency.
Sure.
I don't know how to check.
Before who are you going to give an accounting? Before the King of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be He. People like to feel like they're walking home into their castle. And one of the first things we have to learn is that when we come home, we're walking from our day job to our night job. We're building something beautiful, but we're building. We're builders. We like to think of our parents' home the way we saw it as we were about to leave the house, where everything was comfortable, hopefully, and our parents already had a relationship set up, and it was comfortable coming home. If you lived in that kind of home, then you have to know that it took many years to get there. It took many years of building. And although the process is a beautiful one, but it is also a difficult one. So a person has to be prepared that he's going from his day job to his night job. And more often than not, at least in the beginning, people are coming home with the feeling, I was just out working all day, I want to come home to my castle. I want to rest. I don't want to do dishes. I don't want to take out the garbage. And I don't want to hear about my wife's difficulties throughout her day. Let her hear about my difficulties. No, a person has to walk into the home with humility. And the key to humility is, first of all, not to take ourselves so seriously. Who am I? What am I? I started teaching at a very young age. When I was in high school, I was already teaching. And I felt it was a very big challenge to have little kids calling me rabbi when I'm still a high school student. So what I used to do is walk around with a lollipop in my mouth. I said, if you walk around with a lollipop in your mouth, then people don't take you too seriously, and you don't take yourself too seriously. So I have to remind myself not to take myself too seriously. And I think that's true in many stages in life. And sometimes the more successful one is, the more one takes oneself seriously. Because look at me. I'm the top psychologist. 500 people are on the waiting list just to talk to me. So I must be a very, very smart person. I'm the top doctor. I'm the top surgeon. I'm the top businessman. I'm the millionaire. In every line of business, wherever a person is, a person can feel proud of his accomplishments. A person can feel proud of many things in life. And at the end of the day,
shouldn't you feel proud?
A person should recognize a lot of things such as that. The only difference between me and the next guy is that these are the tools God gave me. I might have used them well, but you know, at the end of the day, I was given these tools. I always say, where would you be if you were born in the middle of an African jungle? With all your brains, where would you be? In the middle of an African jungle. You wouldn't know English, you wouldn't know ABCs, you wouldn't know how to type, nothing. So what's the difference between you and the guy in the African jungle? Where you were born, and how much credit could you take for that? And what about your education? And what about all the other things that worked in your favor? So, before a person takes credit, he has to realize, wait a second, where did I come from? And where am I going to? And what's important in all of this? And one of the things that's most important in our lives is our home. We sometimes forget that. In the secular world, the person is gauged based upon their accomplishments outside the home. And very little is known about what type of person a person was inside the home. And in Judaism, we go the other way around. I think it's Ramchal that says that in the world to come, a person is going to be judged firstly based upon how he was with his wife. When we're gauged on what type of person we are, it's much easier to be nice and kind and patient with someone whose flaws are not in our face day in and day out. But when it comes to someone who we have to contend with the differences in personalities on everything we do, every decision we make, so then it's more challenging. When we gauge ourselves and when we gauge our fellow man, in Judaism our first gauge is where is the person inside the home? What type of home did he succeed in building? And the Peleoids writes that different sages had different challenges within their home. The fact that you see a beautiful home doesn't tell you what challenges had to be surmounted to get there. He writes that for some people, their spouse was their partner to getting to Olam Haba because they worked together to get there. And for some people, their spouse was their partner to get to Olam Haba because they had to contend with such difficulties with a smile to get there. One is always responsible to be nice and kind and pleasant. And it's not always easy. And so the Mishnah tells us the first step is to get off of one's high horse. A person has to remind himself, where did I come from? And where am I going to? And when a person is more humble, then it's easier for other people to deal with them. And then one will find that it is easier to build relationships. So this is a key for life, but it is even more so a key for the home. Chazal say the most difficult thing to live with in a home is a proud person. So I'll say, that's the most difficult person to live with. Proud person and angry person, they go hand in hand. So what you raised earlier, the truth is that pride connects with sheker. Pride is about lies, taking credit for things that aren't really ours. Mm-hmm. And humility is connected with emes, with truth. The only one who is allowed to use the term of pride truthfully is God. And if you think about it philosophically, that makes sense. He's the only one that can really take credit for anything. We 99.9% of what we have is from him. It's not our own doing. And I often challenge couples, where is God in your home? Before you talk to me about where your husband is and where your wife is, I ask you, where is God? How many times do you think of him? When couples speak to me about Shalom Bayis, I often recommend before the spouses meet at night, before he comes home from work, he should sit down on the park bench and say a parak of Tehillim. And she should find some time, for her it's much harder usually if there are kids around, to stop and refocus herself. Wait a second, where is God in this home? How would we behave if we recognized he were here? How would I talk to him? And the simple example for this is a famous story about a rabbi who was invited by one of his students for Shabbos. And when they come in, there's a huge ruckus, and there's they come to the table after the whole mess, and the guy's all embarrassed, and the challahs are uncovered. So the guy says to his wife, "Don't you know we have to cover the challahs for the meal?" And she says, "You're right, right, I'm sorry, I didn't get that." She runs, she gets the challah cover. And they cover the challah, and they make kiddush, and the next day, the rabbi calls the guy in, and the guy was feeling like he has to show his rabbi that he knows the challahs have to be covered. And the rabbi asks him, "Tell me, Chaim, why do we cover the challahs before kiddush?" So Chaim says, "Well, we know that really the bread should get the blessing first. We don't want to shame the bread, so we don't even though the we're going to make the kiddush over the wine instead of the bread. So we, out of deference to the bread, we cover it. It shouldn't see its shame." So we're concerned about shaming the bread, shaming an inanimate object, right? The idea being, but about his own wife, he wasn't concerned to shame her and tell her, "Hey, we got to cover the challahs." Why didn't he go get the challah cover? And our behavior, sometimes we forget that we'd behave differently if our Rebbe was there. How much more so if we'd recognize that God were there? So this is a rule in life. And again, we began the Mishnah by saying it's not an easy rule to abide by. And that's why we need reminders. I tell couples, one of the best things for Shalom Bayis is a break. Meaning the couple can be together for an hour and a half. Take a 5-minute break. Refocus. Bring God back into the picture. And people should try to give them some signs to remind themselves. One of the signs I like is the blessing of Shehakol. Shakol ni'abidvaro. Everything came to be the way he said. Meaning everything. My relationship, my talk, my house, everything. A person should try to give himself points where he reminds himself, wait a second, God's in the picture. Davening is supposed to do that for us. So our Mishnah tells us this is a key to all of observancy, and we can add that this is one of the keys to Shalom Bayis. If a person just puts God in the home. Our sages tell us that before we sinned with the golden calf, the Shekhinah existed in every single home. Notice the Medrash doesn't say with every single Jew. It says in every single home. We say the Shekhinah comes specifically to a couple, not to an individual. Every individual is a half a person. It's only when they unite that the two can become a whole. But Mishnah Beis, Rabbi Chanina, Sgana Kohanim Omer. Rabbi Chanina was the officer of the Kohanim. He was the second highest Kohen. He says, Hevei mitpalel bishloma shel malchut. One should pray for the peace of the authorities. Sheil malei mora'ah, if not for fear of the authorities, ish et reu chayim belao, people would swallow one another alive. So here we see our animalistic tendencies. On this Mishnah, there's a fantastic pshat by the Teferis Yisrael. He says the Mishnah obviously is talking about a rulership which is not so honest, is not so positive, because otherwise you didn't need the Mishnah to tell you to pray for their success. So we're talking about even a situation where the kingdom is not so fair. The Mishnah tells us, pray for their peace. And the Mishnah warns us that if not for the fear of the authorities, ish, even an important person, et re'ehu, even his friend, he'd swallow alive. He wouldn't wait till he were dead. And he'd not only consume him, but he'd swallow him, not even masticating, not even enjoying, just to finish him off. Shows us something about our nature, our competitive nature. And this competitive nature does not belong in the home. This competitive nature is a part of how we advance in the world. We have to try and keep it controlled. We're not supposed to be destructive to one another. It's good that a person wants to advance. It should not be at the expense of his fellow men. There's the story of Rav Aryeh Levin's son who came to a community and they interviewed him to be rabbi, a community in Canada. And they liked him, and they asked him to come for a second interview. I think there were 150 people being interviewed for that position. And they made a mistake when they invited him to be interviewed a second time. They invited another candidate on the same Shabbos. So they both walk in Friday night, and they're sitting, and they realize something's amiss. They realize what's going on. So Rav Aryeh Levin's son went over to the president, and he said, "Let me speak for 2 minutes, and I'll resolve the issue." So the president is thankful that someone else is taking control. And when it comes time to speak, Friday night between Kabbalah Shabbos and Maariv, he gets up and he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you that there is a fantastic candidate waiting for this position of rabbi." And he starts speaking about the greatness of the other candidate. And he gives a 2-minute speech about why this person is fit for the job and they should really take him seriously. And then he says, and with that, I'm done for this Shabbos, and I wish you all good Shabbos. And he sits down to listen attentively to what the other candidate has to say. If his being in a position of rabbi meant pushing someone else down, he didn't want it. So he got up there and gave a speech about why they should take the other man, and then he got down. At the end of the day, they wanted him. So they asked him to come back. They said, we've decided we want you as rabbi of our kehillah. And he said, I'll get back to you in a few days. And they were very surprised. So many people were vying for the job, and he's not willing to take it so fast. And after about a week or 10 days, he agrees. And no one ever knew what happened during those 10 days. What took him so long? Years later, his son told the following story. Every Friday, he would go along with his father to the almana of the former Rav who had passed away. The previous Rav who had passed away, his widow, what? The widow of the previous Rav who had passed away, they'd visit her every Friday, bringing her things that she needed, wishing her a good Shabbos. And she lived in some dark apartment up a flight of steps. He recalls how he once... his father had to do something else, and he asked if he could leave him there, and then he tried walking down those steps and went flying down. But at any rate, one time the almana told him, I want to tell you something about your father. When your father was asked to take the position of rabbi of this kehillah, he asked for a 10-day waiting period. And during those 10 days, he traveled up here to Canada, and he came to meet me. And he said, Rebbetzin, I was offered to take the position of Rav of the Kehillah, and I'm not about to do it unless you give me your blessing. Because you're accustomed to seeing your husband, your former husband, sitting as Rav of the Kehillah. And I know it's not going to be easy for you to see someone else sitting in that seat. And you're still the Rebbetzin of the Kehillah. I still have the utmost respect, and I want you to consider whether you feel I'm fit or not. You're going to call the shot. Whatever you decide, that's what's going to be. And I, of course, she gave him her approval, and he gave her that respect. And he felt there was no way he could take a position when his position meant it would hurt someone else. So yes, God gave us a competitive nature, and it's important, but not at the expense of someone else. And we're told that most people are so competitive that they destroy someone else because of their competitive nature. And unfortunately, this competitiveness can enter home. It's one of the reasons we have difficulty giving compliments to our spouse, because if I say she's great, then what am I? If I can compliment her and I can keep saying how great she is, so then I don't feel I'm as great as she is. But it works the other way around. The more appreciation one can give, the more compliments one can give, the more their spouse will appreciate them. It works exactly the opposite way. And the more one criticizes, the more one points out the other one's flaws, the more one is competitive with one's spouse. So, well, if you're better than me, I'll show you that I'm better than you. They'll get much less appreciation. We always have to remember that that story of Ravari Levine's son. One could not get forward. One should not want to get forward at the expense of someone else. Quite the contrary. The people we like in life are the people that give us a good feeling. Think about where you go to sit when you come to the lunchroom. Where do you go when you come to a wedding? You want to go to those people who know you, who you get a positive feedback from them. Well, our wives are the same way. If we give them the positive feedback, then we're the ones they want to go to. And we'll continue, we'll just finish off this Mishnah. No, I guess we'll leave that for next time. We'll pick up here Bezat Hashem next week.